a dirty purple spike rising up into the sky. Tiny figures marched in phalanxes across the open space between the two towers and the edge of the city. But they barely noticed them, for something impossible loomed over it all.
"Oh," said Leela.
Dawn revealed the mountain. There was nothing natural about it. It was a great hollow half-circle, stretching half a kilometer to their left and right, half a kilometer above them. The sky blazed pale orange around it, making the black metal of its pitted, scorched, artificial skin seem even darker. Fragments of frosted glass, tens, maybe hundreds of meters long, hung down from its edge. Broken teeth around a broken mouth. The sun was to their left, and the great arch was angled towards it, so some of its curving inner surface was lit up. It stretched back for kilometers. Where the light touched the tube's inner surface, a patchwork of ruined buildings was visible, clinging to its concave curve. It had once held a city that could have supported thousands. Leela thought back to station and realized that she was looking into the twin of homelands. The titanic structure lay behind a crater wall of mud and rock. Leela imagined the rest of it, stretching back for kilometers, half buried in the landscape. It looked ancient. "It's astonishing," she breathed. "They built two stations. The one we live on. And this other that fell to earth." Chapter 40. Cassiel was astonished. "None of us ever imagined such a thing." She turned to Leela, the fallen station looming over her. "This artifact is a memory your people didn't know they had. An unknown unknown. Lee's rock will shatter it. You'll lose a vast part of your past. You have to stop it from falling."
"If I hadn't seen it," Leela said, overwhelmed, "I wouldn't believe it."
She stared up at it, a mountain made of history. "How could you ever describe it? People have to see it." She turned back to Cassiel. "You're right. We have to preserve it."
Memory weapons had eradicated digital records, flensing narrative from the past, but its artifacts remained, and they could be read.
Leela imagined Dieter wandering awestruck through this fallen station. He wouldn't wander for long. His sharp analytical mind would soon take over. He would go to methodical work, deducing the lost past from the fragments it left in the present. Perhaps Ambrose would help him, once he'd come back as a fetch. Perhaps this would fascinate even Cormac, drawing him back into life. Perhaps others would be drawn in too, examining this great historical cache and understanding all the memories it contained. The past would still invade station, but in a far more constructive way than Diodatus had ever planned.
"There's a whole new world here," breathed Leela.
She wondered if they'd be able to go public with this. Maybe East would be fascinated by the scale of this new discovery. The gods might at least let humanity see its true history.
And her brother and his friends would be at the heart of the revelation, explaining it to an audience of hundreds and thousands across station and beyond. The thought thrilled her.
It struck her that Diodatus could have offered Dieter something similar when he first persuaded him to sell his weave self.
"I wonder how it fell," asked Leela.
"Maybe the old gods brought it down when the Pantheon escaped them," Cassiel speculated. "I hope there was time to evacuate it. Dragging a mountain back to Earth. Such rage!"
"That would explain why Diodatus is building the laser in the wart. He wants to break the surviving station and finish the job."
"A revenge he's planned for 700 years.
Cassiel's voice was cold.
"Your human gods are brutal."
"He's not one of ours, Cassiel."
"Then whose is he?"
Leela had no answer to that.
"You have to get into the Shining City and stop him," Cassiel told her.
"Wait a second. What's with this you? I thought we were going in together."
Cassiel's voice was sad.
"No, we're going to split up."
She pointed towards the two towers.
"I have to rescue my people from corruption,
And you have to find Dieter, then save yours.
The towers stood next to each other. Diodatus's one was structurally identical to the caretaker's home. A pale tower, lifting up from a saucer of circular streets. But it had none of that other structure's life.
There was no greenery, no bustling human movement, only dirty white buildings and grimy-looking streets.
It was too far away to see if anyone moved through them. The second tower stood next to it, like a dirty stick stabbed into the ground. Snapped-off stubs poked out of it, supporting purple wreaths of corrupted nanogel. Its glow was a little darker than Cassiel's, and a little dimmer, and it had a flicker to it that made it seem broken.
"The snowflake that fell to earth," said Cassiel. "Once I'm in it, I'll expose every single fallen mine to the rest of the totality. I'll neutralize their command and control structures. I'll understand how they fell. And then I'll break it all apart. While you find your brother and stop Diodatus."
"I'll do my best, Cassiel." The scale of the challenge hit her. "But I might not succeed."
"Of course you'll do it. Without you, we wouldn't have got this far," she chuckled. "To be honest, most of the time, I've been holding you back."
"Good of you to admit it," said Leela, as Cassiel's confidence infected her. "So, what's next?"
"We'll open up the local weave. I'll stay to make sure you're fully transferred. Then I'll destroy your disc and go after the fallen mines.
And once that's done, we can stop the rock from falling." Leela stared up at the fallen station, once again overwhelmed. "And start coming to terms with that." Cassiel gazed up with her for a moment. Then she pulled her gaze away from the past.
"Do you want some advice from a pro?" she asked.
Leela nodded.
"Don't think about the big stuff too much. It's too much perspective. Focus on the task in hand. Once that's done, then you can let all this blow your mind. But for now, we've both got jobs to do. And nothing beyond them will mean anything if we don't get them done."
"Then what are we waiting for? Let's get virtual." Leela spun up the cuttlefish and had it open a pathway into Diodatus's virtual realm. A moment, then the world changed. The sky was dark again, soft clouds obscuring a pale moon. The building they stood on was a shining white monolith. Beneath them, a silver plain stretched out towards the shining city. It was dotted with groups of woken sleepers, pixelated with color by their pastel chitons. Softly glowing mines circled them like sheepdogs, guiding them away from Diodatus and into his invasion engines. The shining city itself was all bone-white perfection, its bleached streets reflecting moonlight back out at the world. The tower rose up above it all, a white needle penetrating the sky. The face of Diodatus hung at its peak, a beacon of decay that revealed the truth of the perfect city beneath it. Next to it, the fallen snowflake was a streamlined, perfect lance. The broken maw of the wrecked station was invisible. There was only the empty night sky, prickled with stars. "I always stayed inside the city," said Leela. "I should have looked out into the world. We might have worked out what it all was sooner."
"You had limited time, and you had to find your brother. You were right to focus on that," replied Cassiel. "Now, let's jump over there, and then I'll be on my way."
She zoomed in on its streets. Woken sleepers drifted through them. There were a few fallen mines.
"The sleepers probably won't see us," said Cassiel. "But we need to watch out for the mines."
Leela followed her gaze.
"How about that alleyway?" she asked.
"Looks empty. Once I'm in, I'll jump to Dieter's workshop." Cassiel nodded. Then they both leapt into the city. An instant of darkness and the shining city was there around them. They stood at the end of a short, narrow alleyway. A sobbing gasp came from behind them. They turned together.
"Let's get out of here," said Leela, stepping back.
Cassiel didn't move.
"Even if they could see us, they wouldn't notice us," she said.
A couple leant against the alley's end wall.
The woman was pushed back against it, fabric pulled up around her hips. The man drove into her, his face buried in her neck. Her face was just visible over his shoulder. Her eyes were open, and she looked up at the sky, her face an emotionless vacancy. It had an absent beauty to it. They thrust against each other like components of a machine. The woman gasped again. The man sought the woman's lips. They kissed. His face was as blankly perfect as hers. His unblinking eyes looked through her. The kiss ended and he pulled back. They shuddered in unison. They stayed pressed together for a moment. Then the man pulled away from the woman, pastel chitons dropping back down to cover their perfectly formed bodies. The man turned and walked out of the alleyway without a backward glance, disappearing into the street. The woman followed him, staring straight ahead, turning in the other direction.
"Wow," said Leela. "Are they stoned?"
She moved to the end of the alleyway. Perfect people moved up and down the white street beyond. None of them noticed her.
"You were right about them not seeing us."
Leela felt data arrive from Cassiel. The mind had scanned them.
"Being stoned would be a step up," she told Leela. "They're so limited. Basic sex and acquisition drives only."
The pornomancer and Kedroff stripped right back.
"Yep, there's barely any deep empathy or long-term memory there. Even if they could see us, they wouldn't react to us. They'll take basic orders and follow them, in return for basic rewards, and that's it."
"Dieter's army," she sighed.
"Thank the gods it will never reach station. And what would all these people even do there? Wander round screwing and shopping?"
"Then they'd fit right in," said Cassiel.
"But remember that, under the weave overlay, each of them carries corruption. That's where the danger is. The flies are a delivery system for Diodatus, spreading his corruption wherever they go."
A moment, then she nodded.
"And you're fully transferred into the city. I'm going to wipe the disk and destroy it. I don't want Diodatus finding it and reconstructing any part of you from it."
She paused for a moment, then too suddenly said, "Goodbye." Leela felt the word sadden her. She'd been through so much with Cassiel beside her. She thought of the robotic sexual act they'd just witnessed. Their union was its opposite. But now, at the end, they would be apart, finding separate resolutions for the problems that faced them. She nerved herself. Time was pressing. There was none available for drawn-out farewells, and of course there would be new memories to share after all this was done.
"I've learned so much from you," Cassiel told her. "Thank you."
"Always glad to help a professional," Leela told her, forcing a smile.
"No, really," replied Cassiel. "Thank you. There was so much I didn't know about humanity, about fetches."
She sounded very serious.
"I'm glad. I mean, we've done a lot together. I'm sorry we can't end it all together too."
"Yes," replied Cassiel. "It does seem unfair."
She paused.
"And now I'm going to learn about sacrifice. And you're going to learn about loss. I suppose that's something we both have to do on our own."
Leela didn't want to understand Cassiel. She touched the mind's arm.
"I'm going to find Dieter and take care of Diodatus. You're going to shut down the fallen mines," she said determinedly. "Then we'll get together again and get the hell out of here."
"I'm afraid I haven't been very clear."
A soft, definite sadness suffused the mind's voice.
"Oh," said Leela.
The meaning in Cassiel's words insisted on itself, determined to worm its way inside her.
"But we'll both survive, Cassiel. The way you fight, of course you'll make it, and I've always done all right. For an amateur, I'll be fine."
"You're not an amateur anymore, Leela. You haven't been for a long time. You'll find Dieter. Break Diodatus and make it back home. But I won't."
"Don't be ridiculous. Of course you will. You've seen what I can do with this body."
"Now, I need to go even further. I'm going deep into the fallen snowflake. I'll have to dilute myself too much to do it.
But you'll come back. You've done it before.
No. She held a hand up in front of her face. You've seen how much energy this body contains. Leela nodded, not trusting herself to speak.
Once my nanogel has pervaded the snowflake, I'm going to detonate every single part of it. I'll break everything that holds the fallen minds together, but I'll be lost. I have no choice, Leela, and I've been detached from the totality and its backup systems these last few weeks. These memories I have of our time together only exist here, in me. They will die with me. This I that loves you will be gone.
Chapter 41. It was the memory of Dieter that brought Leela back to herself. She found that she was walking down a pale avenue, looking around confirmed that the whole city had changed. There were barely any sleepers left. The newly woken thronged the streets. They had a dreamlike air of distraction to them, their wide eyes staring blankly out at Diodatus's limited world. Every so often, she'd pass small groups of them gathered together by pressure men, ready to be moved out of the shining city and, she assumed, into another empty tower block. Diodatus's towers stretched up above them all. His face loomed out, a relic of yesterday overseeing a city of sleepwalkers. The cuttlefish pulsed alongside her, a reminder of another past. It contained Cassiel, who was lost to her, and Dieter, who might not be. Leela quickened her pace. She found his workshop, but it was empty. She told the cuttlefish to lead her to him, worried for a moment as it queried the local weave for his location. Relief flooded her as it found him. She jumped, and he was there in front of her, walking down a street. He was, as she'd seen him last, a shimmering, imprecise version of himself. But he was also alert and active, focused on the task at hand. Then, too, there was relief. She hadn't damaged him. Part of her wanted to just unmask herself and leap forward, but there was so much at stake. She needed to be sure that she was ready to say the right things in the right way. So, before revealing herself, she decided to observe him. She also wanted to understand a little more about the role he was playing in this revivified city. 34 hours remained before the rock fell. There was still time. She watched her brother bustle through the streets, moving with an urgency absolutely at odds with the dazed wanderings of the Woken. He shimmered through different versions of himself. The most predominant one wore scruffy jeans, a black t-shirt, and a dark leather jacket greyed by time. He stopped when at last he found a sleeper, kneeling down to roll her over. It was a woman. He laid his hands on her face and stared at her intently. She sighed. "You're ready," he told her, relaxing a little. He opened each of her eyes. She stared blankly up. Then he gestured a command into the air. A blue globe appeared hanging above him. It was about the size of a football and looked like a perfect drop of deep ocean. Leela recognized the memory ball that Dieter had drawn out of Kedroff and the Pornomancer. She remembered how he'd created a ball of his own memories to share with her. And so, when he reached up and pulled the ball down over his head, she wasn't surprised. He was immersing himself in the past, ready to pour it back into the present. He fumbled for the woman's face, laying a hand over her blankly staring eyes. His arm stiffened, and his back arched. The veins in his neck were suddenly blue-black. Dark lines wrote themselves across the back of his hands. He lifted up his palms. Liquid memories poured out of them, pooling in the sleeping woman's eyes, but never overflowing beyond them. A minute or so, and they slowed. Dieter's veins lost their dark color, vanishing back into his skin. The pools subsided, re-exposing the sleeper's eyes. The globe vanished, and Dieter slumped forward, exhausted. A moment, and the sleeper blinked, then blinked again. She took a sobbing breath. Her body shook. Dieter bent down, his mouth to her ear. Lila could just hear him whisper, "Get up. Walk. Reawaken your body. Prepare yourself for further orders." The woking sleeper pulled her arms up and stretched out. Her movements were stiff. She rolled over onto her side, then stood, rising awkwardly to her feet. It was as if she was controlling her body for the very first time. A step, then another step, then she was almost walking. She tottered down the street in a straight line, her movements becoming less awkward as she went. When she reached the corner, she was moving in a way that was almost human. She rounded it without looking back. Dieter was still kneeling. He watched her go. He was all slump. He looked exhausted. "One more done," he said to himself. Then, "Onwards." He stood, swaying slightly, and started down the street again. Lila followed him through the dazed throng. These crowds were his work. "Cassia was right," Lila said to herself. "They'd fit right in a homeland shopping mall." Dieter found another sleeper and repeated the process, pushing new motivations into him, then watching as he stood up and walked away. Lila glanced around at the silent, busy streets. He must have been working non-stop for days to bring all these people back. And now she had to convince him to return to her and his true past. She touched the pendant. It could no longer force memories on her brother. Instead, it described one version of the truth about him, the version that Lila had lived with all her life and wanted so desperately to find again. Very soon, she hoped, she would. She waited until he'd finished. He stood up slowly. The degradation had progressed. He was too many versions of himself at once. Every single one looked exhausted. She wanted to pull him to her and hold him tight, forcing comfort on him. But that wouldn't work. She decloaked. "Hello, Dieter," she said, making no move towards him. It took him a moment to take in her presence. "What the hell?" he groaned. "Oh no, you again. So you remember the last time? You tried to force rewrite my memory, crashed me." He took a step back. "Nearly did a lot of damage. It's not the sort of thing you forget." "Did any of the memories take?"
"Fuck no."
"I'm sorry. I thought I was doing the right thing. You were trying to take me away from all this, from my work, but you failed. And now I'm almost done." He looked around. "Pretty much all of them woken, ready to remake Station." Lila wanted to tell him that Diodatus just wanted to destroy Station, that he could only deploy the woken sleepers down here on Earth, but she bit her tongue. She didn't want to force her brother into an argument. "You look sad," she said.
"Of course I do," he replied. "Because you're here. A weapon made out of memories. An abuse of history.
Did the Fetch Counselor create you? Or one of the Pantheon?"
"Nobody created me. I'm the real Lila, and I've come for you."
"You're very like her. But you tried to kill me."
"I wasn't trying to kill you. I was trying to help you. I was desperate and I got it wrong. I'm very sorry about that."
She reached up and pulled the pendant from her neck. "The memories are gone. It's inert now. It can't hurt you." A pause.
"All my shields are up. Damn right you can't hurt me. And I've already told Diodatus you're here. He's sending security for you."
"They can take me. I'm really not here to attack you. I just want you to remember who you really are, and all we've really shared."
She thought of Cassiel.
It would be so sad to lose that.
As she spoke, the outlines of three fallen minds shimmered into being around her. Lila stepped forward towards her brother. She reached for Dieter's hand as she whispered in his ear,
"Diodatus rewrote our past." She pushed the pendant into his hand before he could realize what she was doing.
This is the true shape of your memories, the space that your weave self left behind when you died. Compare it with the shape of your past now. You'll see so much difference. Look back. There'll be broken moments.
She knew she couldn't push him, but she did want to warn him. The Shining City is going to be destroyed very soon. If we're not out of here by then, we'll both die a true death. I'm going to be taken to Diodatus. I'll hold out for as long as I can. Think about who you want to be, who you really are. Please choose me, not him. And then come and find me, and we'll escape together.
He stiffened, but his fingers wrapped around the pendant. Then a firm grip pulled her off him. Her arms were behind her back, handcuffs snapped around them. Holt appeared from nowhere, as unpleasant a presence when virtual as in the flesh. Leela felt a tingle as he scanned her.
Yes, it's built on your sister's memories. Well done.
Yeah, well, sighed Dieter. Hopefully they won't send another one after me. He sounded shaken.
Fingers crossed, and even if they do, they pretty much run out of time. Everything's running like clockwork. That means you're safe now. Good work, Dieter.
Dieter didn't look particularly enthused. Do you need me for anything else? He asked. Holt shook his head.
Cheers, then.
Dieter caught Leela's eye as he turned.
She was sure she saw uncertainty flicker across his face. The pendant was still in his fist. His knuckles were white. She held her breath. Perhaps he'd tell Holt what she'd just said. Perhaps he'd toss the pendant to him, or just throw it away. But he remained silent, and it stayed in his hand until he turned the corner and was gone.
And that's that, said Holt, sounding relieved. I can stop pretending.
But there was still a vast, twitchy paranoia about him.
He's running all our IT. He's got the keys to everything. Diodatus would be so angry if anything happened to him.
Leela was appalled.
You manipulative little bastard.
She felt the skull face itch inside her, hidden deep beneath the caretaker's camouflage. She was tempted to open it up on Holt. She almost wished she still had the fetch counselor's memory virus to drop on him.
You know exactly who I am, don't you?
Oh, yes, replied Holt. You really are Leela. You've given me so much stress since we met. You and your twin. But that's all over now.
Leela imagined the virus acting on him. At first, the thought of it gave her deep satisfaction. But then she realized that it would purge his memory of all his crimes. It struck her that that would be a kind of blessing. He'd never have to come to terms with them. He might even avoid judgment for them.
You've got to let me go, she told him. I've seen the laser in the pyramid. I've seen the fallen station. Diodatus is going to blow up our home and kill everyone on it. We have to stop him.
Haven't you realized?
A haunted, broken look crossed his face.
No one can stop him. We can only try and make things as easy as we can for him, so he does the least possible damage along the way.
Holt! He's going to blow up station, corrupt the totality, and take over on Earth. There is no least possible damage. There's only rewriting or death for millions.
Holt gave her a nervous glance.
Oh, no. He's planning something very different.
Has he broken your memory, too?
No. I'd know if he had. I've made very sure of that. I worry about it so much, Leela.
He paused.
I don't think you'd ever guess what he's actually planning. It's not nearly as melodramatic as you think. I mean, when you understand, you'll see what I mean. He's a visionary, in his own way. And nobody can stand against him.
We just have to go with him. His eyes were full of pleading agony.
There's really no choice, Leela.
Gods, he's really done a number on you.
I've seen people you wouldn't believe fall to him, like that.
There was such desperation in his voice. Leela almost felt sorry for him. She wondered how she'd have ended up if she'd felt as alone as he seemed to.
"People I've looked up to for years. People I thought would save us.
I've seen him bend a god to his will, Leela. I'm not like you, Holt. I'd never work for him."
"You don't know what he's really planning."
"He's lied to you."
"No, he really hasn't. You'll see when you meet him. He'll explain it all."
"He wants to see me?"
Inside herself, Leela cheered. But there was disquiet, too. If Holt was right, then she might have radically misunderstood her adversary.
"Why?"
"He sees you as a lever to help him control Dieter more efficiently. And resistance fascinates him. He finds it so hard to understand. He likes to push against it. Perhaps I can push back."
"Oh no, Leela."
Holt looked genuinely terrified for her.
"Please don't stand up to him. It'll make things so much easier for you. You'll be able to keep so much more of yourself safe. Please, just do whatever he wants you to. It's the only way to survive."
Chapter 42. The floor was all dead flies. They lay in drifts, deeper in the angles of the room, piled up against the hard edges of tables and chairs, shallow where there were open spaces. The black chitin of their exoskeletons, stripped of their flesh cores by time, seemed to absorb the soft evening light, throwing back barely any of the purples and greens and greys that oozed into the room from the pale clouds outside. The wiring was brighter in the gloom, silver shimmers scattered across the floor, tiny components liberated from their hosts. There were miniature circuit boards, too, shining out like fallen moons. Leela was profoundly relieved that she was hanging above them. There was a day left until the rock landed. She'd been unconscious for 10 hours. She'd hung in the middle of the room, locked into full presence. She could speak and gesture, but she couldn't move anywhere. And Dieter hadn't come. She looked over at the window. The broken moor of the fallen station loomed above her, a darkness carved in the sky. She inspected the room. Luxury rose up from the floor's black sea. The picture window that stretched the length of one wall was framed with heavy velvet curtains, the deep red and gold that patterned them a rhyme with the sky outside. The walls were papered with a repeating black and silver design. Ancient brand iconography fringed with faded writing that read as soft bronze blurs. There were tables. Some were scattered with gilded candelabra and dark sculptures of naked men and women, tower islands emerging from dead insect waves. Others seemed entirely functional, polished steel showing through the insect corpses. Only one of them was bare of flies, a lacquered chest at the center of the room, as long and deep and wide as a tall man. There were long glass-sided cases piled up against the walls, to the left and right of the room's main window. In the gloom, it was hard to see what they held. As the light shifted with the setting sun, fiery glints sparkled, then died within them. Leela imagined stored relics, Diodatus' personal museum of conquest and achievement. There were images, too. They hung on the room's rear wall. Leela queried the room's weave systems, and was surprised to be told that there was nothing virtual about them. She glanced across at them. A dark wooden frame surrounded a couple staring out at her. The man was dressed in a dark robe, fringed with brown fur. He had a thin, aristocratic face with a large nose. The woman, who held his left hand, wore an ornate green dress, its rich folds, an abstract pattern that zigzagged to the floor. Her own left hand held its fabric up over her belly. There was a bulge that made Leela think she might be pregnant. A little grey dog stood at their feet, peering curiously back at the viewer. There was a mirror on the back wall of the room they stood in, its round border beveled like a cog. A shape peered back out of that, too. Another image was split into three. The central panel, twice the width of the two side panels, showed a man in a white loincloth, nailed to a crossbar supported by a high, thin post. Together, they made a T. Its wood was almost as dark as the winged figures that hovered behind and beyond it, black shapes weeping in an otherwise spotless sky. Four richly dressed figures clustered around the base of the post. They too wept. There was pale countryside, and in the distance a city the colour of bone. Leela imagined stepping into that landscape, passing by the crucified man and walking away from both the gods and the dead. An escape of sorts. But her past would accompany her, and so the twin burdens of loss and duty would remain with her too. Diodatus would still live. She'd still be hoping that her brother would hear and act on the message she'd shared with him. And Cassiel would still be lost to her. She imagined the relief of letting it all slip from her memory. But she didn't think she could ever be as relaxed about losing her past as the caretaker had been. And even he had been so strongly driven to recover the truth of himself. She sighed and returned her attention to the room, wondering when and how her adversary would manifest. She didn't have to wait much longer. The first signs of his presence came as sunlight vanished from the world outside and the clouds lost their fierce lava glow. The long, low chest at the center of the room lit up, fiery light chasing patterns down its side. Leela thought of the glyphs that Mandala had burned in the desert. These had a brisk efficiency to them. They seemed to represent some kind of boot-up sequence. As they ticked down, lights flicked on around the room. The display cases were waking up too. She assumed that each would hold a bric-a-brac of jeweled fripperies. She was wrong. Every single cabinet was occupied by an ancient, desiccated body. Leela was reminded of the workers she'd seen slaving for Diodatus. But these cadavers were far older, far more mummified than even the creatures tending to his fusion reactors. There was no flesh left, only bone and parchment skin, nothing soft to moderate the sharp, carving edges of their wasted faces and arms, their legs and hands and feet. And there was so much more ornamentation. There were medals, dense with brand iconography, scribbled across with illegible inscriptions. Fabrics, vibrant with bright, imperishable colours, clashed brutally with the decay that surrounded them. There were wands and sceptres and ceremonial weapons, still clutched in dead hands. One held a gold feather, dripping with blue and red jewels. Another had a goblet filled with dusty pearls. There were swords and spears, pens and orbs, stars and maces, chains and even small statues. Some of animals, others of humans. There were breastplates and shining gold and silver helmets. Jewels filled empty eye sockets and gilded teeth grinned in dead mouths. It all shone beneath the lights. A horde dressing the dead with brilliance. It spoke of only greed, of a rapacious desire that had run out of control and scrawled itself across them all in luxury. And as Leela inspected them all, she saw that each had one single decoration in common. A triangle set into their torso, pointing up past their chests to their heads. A hiss from the center of the room pulled Leela's attention back to the sarcophagus. Its top split as twin doors opened. A white mist drifted out. Possibly vapor from some sort of chiller unit. Possibly just dust. A low, dissonant buzzing leapt into the air. Leela remembered the harmonious hum of Mandala's hives. This was something very different. The harsh, soaring rasp of a fly swarm. And then, with a high-pitched whine, machinery whirred into action, thrusting the case's occupant up into a standing position. Leela was behind the sarcophagus, so as he rose, he was also lost to her sight. She glimpsed a flash of jewels, a writhing of flies,
a pale oval that could have been a face. And then she could only see the back of the bier that held him. It sighed to a stop. There was nothing to be seen or heard of him but buzzing. Leela waited, tense with expectation. She wondered what he was going to do. Perhaps he would torture her. Perhaps there would be a psychoactive attack, assaulting her memory structures. Perhaps he would just try and delete her. She wondered how long her defenses could stand up to an ancient god. Holt said that she fascinated him. Perhaps he'd talk. She sent a silent call out to Dieter, praying for his arrival. She reached into her skull face, requesting a readiness check. It shifted in her mind like a fish in a strong current, signaling back that it was live. And then, a distraction, a soft succession of quiet chinking sounds, whispering into the room from all around her. At first, Leela thought that Diodatus had stepped from his pedestal and turned towards her, but he remained immobile. Looking round, Leela gasped. Eyelids had shifted, exposing ancient pupils to the light. There was motion, too. Every head was turning towards the sarcophagus. Then they were still again. The sun's last brilliance died in the sky, and darkness took the world outside. At last, there was a soft creaking from the bier. Diodatus moved towards the window and placed a hand against it. All the exhibits moved their heads to follow him. His hand was gloved in gold wire and scarlet and amber jewels. There were bones visible beneath the wire, and a crawling darkness where flesh should have been. Then he spoke. Leela wasn't sure what sort of voice she'd been expecting. Perhaps something harsh and commanding. Perhaps something thin and wheedling. Anything but this gentle buzzing. The soft corrosions of time had left the old god with hardly any breath to push his words out into the world.
I have been watching you for so long,
he whispered, his voice a ghost on the air.
Or rather, watching the absence that you were. Always signs of resistance. The mind rescued. The pyramid penetrated. My poor brother helping you on station. Then using the last of his credit to buy an insertion mission from the powers of the air. A vacuum suit that contained a skeleton running through the night. But I could never see you. New thing in this world that you are.
He turned towards her. Red-jeweled eyes glittered. A pale skull was wrapped in a tarnished silver net. The nose was two holes. Gold gleamed within them. Teeth were emeralds and wire. The jaw was tightly sealed to the skull by a tapestried strap. His neck and chest were a scummed rainbow of jewels and fabric. An upwards-pointing triangle sat beneath it, carved into the space above his belly. Wealth shone out of the pyramid. There was also rotten flesh and a susurrus of flies. They bustled within and beyond it. The dead god's torso was filled with black organs shaped from insects and technology. Leela gaped. His whole being was a jeweled protest against time's consumption of life. Dieter will come, she told herself. She wouldn't hit Diodatus yet. I had to try and stop you, she said. It was hard to see him as something that could be talked with. She forced empathy on herself. And I can imagine how you felt. Until now, you've been a mystery to me too. Diodatus chuckled. A soft wheezing sound rattled out of his chest. Leela imagined scores of dirtily transparent wings shaking in unison.
I suppose I have been a mystery to you all, except those who found and followed me. And even they barely see me. They see themselves and their own desires, and then I fulfill those desires. Then they do my bidding. Will you accept that gift from me, I wonder?
He moved. Walking was difficult for him. One hand reached for the side of a table, bracing his frail body. Chitin rustled as he shuffled towards her, his feet lost in drifts of dead flies. The exhibit's jeweled faces glittered, tracking him like camera nests.
As so many others have done.
Leela was terrified that he would attack her. It was never a gift, she replied. She scrabbled for words that might stop him. You forced yourself on them. Are you going to force me to serve you now? That would prove how weak you are. That if I could choose, I'd refuse you.
Diodata stopped moving.
Individual tendons and muscles strained to tip his head up and back, until it moved far enough for gravity to catch it. It slumped back with a lurch, and he laughed. His new stance opened up his chest. It caged a fury of beating wings, shimmering for 30 or 40 seconds, until at last they stilled and his head tipped forward again. The creatures in the glass cases shook too, pulsing out wheezing echoes of their master. They returned to stillness as he recovered himself.
What are they? Seeking more distraction.
My subsidiaries, replied Diodatus dismissively. They chose to compete with me, and then they lost. And I took them over one by one. Such titanic struggles. I understand that those who cared to look could even see them from station. And I'll have 4 more subsidiaries once the Rose has helped me take the other gods of the Pantheon.
They'll be fully slaved to you.
They don't need freedom, he snorted. Don't deserve it. Do you, I wonder?
Leela felt vast power querying the outer recesses of herself. Protection spun up within her, prickling in her mind.
Dieter would come.
It's not about deserving it, she replied. It's about being right. Don't you want to be right? Don't you want to be the only real alternative?
Oh, but I'm that already. You all choose me in the end. Look at your brother. He's been so helpful. All I needed to do was show him something he truly desired. And how quickly he came to me. How completely.
Real passion lit in her, chasing out fear. You've butchered him. You've broken his memory. He doesn't even understand what he's lost.
Diodata snorted.
Managing him. Adjusting him. Making him more efficient. I brought focus to him. Polished his motivation. He still has the most important parts of his past. And he chose to let me work on him.
He chose that?
Leela was shocked.
He knew that following me would involve sacrifices. Hard choices.
Theodatus' soft voice was nearly a whisper.
If he didn't fully understand them, well, that's not my responsibility.
Leela remembered how rapt Dieter used to become in new discoveries, new pieces of technology.
She could well imagine him losing himself in all that the pressure men had offered him, not really registering any potential downside, trusting in his own technical mastery to pull him out of any difficulties. She was at once saddened and infuriated by his naivety. He had always been achingly vulnerable to the carving greed of a corporate entity like Diodatus.
"I can imagine that," she said, hating herself for having to admit it.
"Of course, if you chose to serve me, I could go easy on him. I wouldn't have to chop his past around anymore. I could restore parts of his life that he's lost. But I'd need you to help me manage him. Make sure he kept working for me."
"And what do you think would make me fall like that?" Diodatus was only a few feet away from her. She could feel his virtual presence looming over her, ready to break and enter.
"Maybe just your love for him," he mused.
And Leela felt the temptation within her.
"Maybe something more. So I will find out more about you. Build up your profile. Understand what you value."
He reached a hand up to cup her cheek. She felt hard, cold jewels scratch her skin. The hand contracted a little, and four bone fingers forced themselves against her. Their touch was uncertain, and they were shaking gently. Leela sensed great physical weakness and was heartened. But there was still no Dieter.
"Then I would have you," continued Diodatus. "I'll have my agents track down your weave history."
His jewel eyes flared.
"I can summon it through the rose. She holds so much knowledge."
Disgust flooded Leela. The touch of his hand was intrusion enough. The thought of what he was suggesting was much worse.
"Then I can make you just the right offer. One you could never refuse."
He was silent for a moment.
"Like this," he said,
lifting his hand to press a fingertip against her forehead. There was a great, effortless intrusion in her mind, and the world changed. There was no shock, no nausea, just a sudden and absolute difference. Leela was sitting in her bedroom back on station, perched on the end of her bed in her favorite t-shirt and jammies. Through the window, the Taste Refresh Festival pulsed through the sky. A smart but funky little outfit lay spread across the bed, all ready to be picked up and pulled on. Leela somehow knew that she was going out that night, that she'd be with Miwa and Dave and the others, that all would be marvelous. Joy suffused her, turning to bliss when a happy sound drifted in from the kitchen. Dieter singing quietly to himself as he reheated last night's pizza in the microwave. The moment was perfect. But then, just as memory crashed in and complicated it, Diodatus appeared, sitting on the bed beside her, just where East had been.
"Leela," he whispered, "such an easy dream to gift you with. A little flat, an attentive brother, perhaps a lovely, lovely mother to care for you, perhaps even a father too."
And there was temptation again, shifting like a snake within her. Leela had fantasized about escape, but always the thought of losing Dieter had brought her back to hard, difficult reality. In this dream that Diodatus offered her, he would be present. But she ached with loss for another now. Dieter would be with her, but Cassiel would still be gone. And if she accepted Diodatus's offer, she wouldn't just be betraying Station.
She'd be walking away from every part of the mind's faith in her.
No, she said. Perfection broke. A second of absence, and then they were both back on Earth. A buzzing laugh came from Diodatus. He let his hand drop. His arm rattled as it fell.
That was just a first attempt, he wheezed. A very unsophisticated one. I'll dig deeper. I'll find the right way in.
He paused.
Or I would if I had time. But there's none left, is there?
What do you mean? Fear pulsed through Leela.
You, the people pulling your strings. They are going to punish me, aren't they? Eradicate me. And all this, too.
His abdomen creaked as he turned, lifted his arm again, and indicated the window.
All I have built. I understand that another rock is falling towards me, sent by my children to wipe out the last remnant of their past.
No, no, there's nothing like that. You've won, Diodatus. Desperation roared in Leela's mind. There's nothing we can do to stop you. She reached for the skull face. She might have to use it to break Diodatus before Dieter came. She might lose her brother forever. Diodatus laughed again.
Oh, bless you. Did you think I could be killed by a stone? I invented that attack 1,000 years ago, and I brought it back into your world. I told Kingdom to use it against his enemies. Saw it work for him too, for a while, at least.
Diodatus looked down. There was something defeated in his posture.
He was the best of my children. The only one to come back to me.
He paused for a moment, lost in his own thoughts. Then his face snapped back up towards her.
And you think